Hello, I am Mahendra Gupte. Let's look at Chapter 2, International Operations. Why overseas markets? Sales growth and brand recognition, risk diversion, diversification across markets, seasonal advantage and global reach, access to new customer segments. So, what is it that a company would look at when they want to go overseas? They are looking at sales growth and brand recognition. So when does a company actually look at going overseas? Once you have saturated the market locally or domestically, and now you want brand recognition across the country, or rather overseas. The other reason could be that a brand is so sought after when it is in the local country that you realize that if these same people would be comfortable or would want that brand in their country themselves. What I'm trying to give you an example here is that of McDonald's. When the reason that McDonald's came to India was they realized that a lot of Indians who went to the US for tourism purposes would want or would look at or would desire to have the same McDonald's in India itself. And that was the idea that brought McDonald's to India. Risk diversification across markets. Now, if you are selling in different countries, you are diversifying your risk of selling or of sales across different markets, which means that if one of your markets is politically or geopolitically affected, you still have two other markets or three other markets to look for. Seasonal advantage and global reach. Many a times, certain products that you are in as a business are seasonal. Now, if you are selling across different countries globally, the same season continues in the southern hemisphere and at a certain point, different point of time in the northern hemisphere. So you would have seasonal advantage. And global reach. One, of course, you are able to reach the product to that seasonally affected or seasonally advantageous market for you. Access to new customer segments. When you go to different countries, you realize that there are certain changes in your product, which you, if done, a very small change, if done, you are able to get a huge market in that country. Now, this would be access to new customer segments. So because similar to the local market or the market that you are currently operating in, there would be different customer segments in the new market that you are looking for. What influences market entry? Market size and growth potential, product type and life cycle, company objectives and involvement level, time horizon and competitive strategy. What does this mean? Market size and growth potential. Let's say, for example, you are manufacturing an engineering product here and you realize that the product that you are making has a huge potential and a huge market in any other overseas country. This is where you start realizing that there is growth potential. I could actually grow my sales by making sales in that market. And it is not only growth of a year or 2 years, but the market is huge. So I could have a continued growth over a longer period of time. Product type and life cycle. Where is your product in its product life cycle? And the new market that you are trying to explore, where would your product be in that market? Because to a large extent, the life cycle will change or will be a little different from one market to the other, depending on how or what kind of product you manufacture and where are your competitors in that market. Company objectives and involvement level. This is the most critical and important part as to what that influences market, international market entry. The reason being that it all depends on what the company wants to really look at. Is the company looking at being a global brand? Is the company looking at only covering two or three more countries and call themselves an international company? Well, these objectives will definitely decide what kind of involvement should be there from the company's side. Time horizon and competitive strategy. How long are or how deep are your pockets? Because that will decide the time horizon that you would want to actually make your product available and known in the foreign or the overseas market. And when you get into any overseas market, let us realize there would be similar products, if not the same, already in the market. So what is going to be your competitive strategy or your strategy to beat the competition there? And also understand that once you start taking away even maybe a percent of market, the competitor is going to react. So there are two ways of getting into an international market. One is indirect exporting. Let's understand what does this mean. There is no direct presence in the foreign country. You use an export trading company, ETC, or export management corporations, EMC, or piggybacking arrangements. Let's look at each of them separately, but just let's understand what does this mean. No direct presence in foreign country means that the company, that is your company, doesn't have an office in the foreign country, nor does it have a shop or a branding there that it is trying to show its presence in. So you use either of the other options, export trading companies, export management corporations, or piggybacking arrangements. What does an export trading company do? An ETC buys and resells products, takes ownership of goods, acts as domestic sale for manufacturer, specializes in products or regions. So an ETC is going to buy the products from you as a, let's say you are a local manufacturer. So the company buys, the ETC will buy the material from you. That means it's a local sale that happens here domestic. Then they will move that material or those your products to the overseas market and sell them there. So they take ownership of the goods, act as domestic sale for manufacturer. That means when you are selling it to them here locally, it is a domestic sale, and specializes in products or regions. So there are these export trading corporations or companies which specialize in products and regions. The reason being that there are certain technical inputs or technical knowledge required to sell a product as well as target certain customers. And with regions being also specialization in the sense that if you are trying to look at, for example, the Middle East, then if your salespeople or the ETC salespeople are aware of the Arabic language, they would be able to get through with a lot many countries in the region. The same thing would happen to Europe, where Germany, France, others would require maybe two languages, and then you are able to move products and sell your products in those regions there. What does an export management company corporation do? Acts as an agent, not an owner. Earns commission on sales, handles documentation and shipping, acts as export department for manufacturer. But this is export manufacturing management corporations is how Japan as a company, as a country, was able to reach a lot of their products across the world. When they started exporting, especially the car spare part manufacturers or the car OEM manufacturers in Japan, when they wanted to explore markets, overseas markets, where their cars were already being sold. For example, an OE supplier to Toyota or Honda wanted to go and sell material to the Middle East. What they did was use an export management corporation which specialized in sales of automobile parts in the Middle East. So you have specialized people who are in specialized in terms of products as well as regions. Now, what does this company do? It acts as an agent. It is not an owner. That means it finds out a customer or a distributor or a person or a company in the overseas market who is interested in dealing with the products that you have to offer. How, what does it do? It acts as an agent. It is not the owner. It earns commission on the sales. So if they are able to get, they coordinate on behalf of the manufacturer with the distributor or the organization in the overseas company and get orders. Whatever is the order billed for, the amount is where they, their commission gets decided. They handle the documentation and the shipping because they have the knowledge as well as they have the infrastructure to handle the shipping companies and the import or the landing in the foreign country. They act as an export department for the manufacturer. Now, this is where a lot of expertise is made available to the manufacturer, that the manufacturer now does not look at handling the export activities, which can be extremely cumbersome and painful if you are not used to exports from a country. Piggybacking. What is piggybacking? Supplier follows customer into foreign market. Collaborative exporting arrangements. Lower risk entry strategy. Dominant exporter supports supplier. Supplier follows customer into foreign market. Collaborative exporting arrangements. What does supplier follows customer into foreign market mean? Let's say, again, take the example of automobiles. If Suzuki sells in the Middle East, then the suppliers of the OE suppliers of the same car also set up shop there, or they would set up an office to sell spare parts. For example, Honda Motors Japan sells a lot of Honda cars in the Middle East. In Dubai, they have a Honda spare parts office, which is the liaison office for the entire Middle East, and they have a warehouse which stocks parts for local supplies. Local in the sense, in the entire GCC as well as other Middle East countries. Collaborative exporting arrangements. This is where you get into export arrangements along with your other partners or other people in different markets or different products or similar products. As a family, you are offering more products to a country or an overseas market. Lower risk entry strategy. You do not have too much of risk because you are assured that if the main product that you are a spare part supplier to or an OE supplier to, if that is selling, your products are definitely going to sell. So the risk is much lower. Dominant exporter supports the supplier. An automobile brand will definitely support the supplier because he is OE to him, to the brand, and supports the sales in that country. Active exporting. Company actively manages exports, uses agents or distributors, higher involvement and control, requires export capability. So what we just saw in indirect exporting is where the involvement of the management is much lower. They are sort of testing markets to actually get into, before they get into export, active exporting. So one can say that indirect exporting is the first stage, and then you get into active exporting. Now, what happens in active exporting? Company actively manages the exports. That means they will either hire themselves, have an export department, or they've hired an C&F agent who takes care of all their documentation and acts as their export. But the difference between an EMC and a C&F agent is that the C&F agent is only going to handle the product, doesn't have any technical backup, doesn't have any technical knowledge on the product itself. The company would then use agents or distributors. Now, the difference with agents and distributors would be that an agent could be hired and then the agent takes care of a region, of a country, or of a market. Whereas a distributor is where the company would definitely have to go to that country, look for the number of distributors there, start interacting with them, shortlist a few, and then start actual business with that distributor. Again, we all know what the difference, major difference between an agent and distributor is that an agent works on commission basis. He doesn't own the product, whereas a distributor is the actual importer of the product in the overseas country. Higher involvement and control. As I said, the company's management has got much more involvement and would like to control the business, and requires export capability. Requires export capability means you have got to have an export cell or a set of people who understand export markets, who understand export transactions, and who are able to relate what actually happens in an overseas country as far as trade is concerned. Agent versus distributor. Agent earns commission but doesn't hold inventory. A distributor buys and stocks goods. Distributors bears higher risk. Choice depends on strategy. So, as we understood, an agent earns commission. He doesn't hold any inventory of the products. Distributor pays and stocks goods. That means the distributor buys the products from the manufacturer and holds in stock and then distributes them in his region, his area, his country. The distributor definitely bears a higher risk, because while the manufacturer may not control the selling price, the distributor definitely, with respect to the price and the market, controls the volume of sales. Choice of strategy, that means whether the company would like to use an agent or a distributor, will depend on the strategy that it wants to adopt. Marketing subsidiary. A company-owned sales office abroad handles marketing and distribution, high investment and long-term commitment, better market control. A company goes to an overseas market, realizes that there are very few or very, very limited distributors available there, who are not able to take up their product as well because of competitor products that they already handle. In such a situation, a company would want to open a marketing subsidiary. That means they have their own company-owned sales office in that overseas country. It handles the marketing and distribution. That means this subsidiary office is going to be the importer of the material from the manufacturer from the origin country. Which means it involves high investment and long-term commitment. Better market control. Definitely, if you are present in the market and you are also the stockholder, you can definitely control that market. But then, as they have said, it requires a high amount of investment, not only in holding stocks, but in trying to build an infrastructure, trying to build a team of export salespeople in your office. Production abroad is where the company has moved from the marketing subsidiary to realizing that imports is no more going to serve the market that they are already in. And that is where they start production abroad. Manufacturing in the foreign country, lower manufacturing and logistics costs, avoids high import tariffs used when capacity is limited. So let's say today you start business of exporting, and in 10 years down the line, your product has picked up so high volumes that you now lack the capacity in your manufacturing country to meet that overseas requirement. And this is when you or the management looks at manufacturing in a foreign country. It lowers the manufacturing and logistics costs, because now you are going to manufacture locally. You are moving raw materials there or importing raw materials from different countries, which could further lower your costs. Avoids high import tariffs. Let us realize, the world over, the import tariffs are always higher on a finished good rather than a semi-finished or a in-process good. So when you start to look at manufacturing in that country, you are definitely going to avoid high import tariffs. And used when capacity is limited, as I said, once you have exhausted the manufacturing capacities in your own country and you realize that your export market today is more than 25-30% of your sales, you would want to look at manufacturing in a foreign country. Contract manufacturing. Local manufacturer produces goods, reduces entry barriers used in automobiles, cement, printing, etc. Printing tied to local networks. Local manufacturer produces goods. That means you get into that country. That is, you now have decided to produce overseas, but you don't want to get into actual manufacturing or setting up a factory there. You use a local manufacturer who is already in the similar line of business or who is ready to look at manufacturing your product in that country. Reduces entry barriers because now what you are importing into that export country is the raw materials or semi-finished goods rather than finished goods. Where is this used? In automobiles, cement, printing. Printing, we have seen, you must have come across a lot of international printing houses who have got local India offices and who have got India operations. So what do? They use local printers in India to brand their products, print their products and brand them as printed in India. Marketing tied to local networks. The same books, to extend that example further, these books are all marketed through the local networks. In fact, some of these books, since they are printed here and they have got certain business restrictions as well as territorial restrictions, you many a time see that for sale in India and Indian subcontinent only. Licensing is another way of ensuring that your product is successful or rather is present in the overseas market. Grant of intellectual property rights, royalty-based income, low investment and risk, and limited control. So what do? You have a finished product which is great, which is accepted worldwide, and now you would like to start selling this product or manufacturing this product overseas. You grant their intellectual property rights to the partner that you have tied up with in the foreign country. How does he pay you? He pays you on a royalty basis. That means every piece that he manufactures or sells, depending on what kind of agreement you get into. And then you keep getting that every month, every year, whatever is the arrangement. Low investment and risk. The reason is the investment here is those of your intellectual property and your brand licensing. Limited control. You cannot really control what your partner in the overseas country is really doing.